Hello, welcome to Series 5, Episode 13 of the Prompted by Nature podcast. I'm Helen and I hope you're doing well this week. So before we start, as always, your action point for this week. So for today, it's a little more vague than usual because I feel like I often do very specific action points that relate usually just to the UK, purely because that's kind of my immediate environment. But for this action point, I want you to think about something that really annoys you, like really makes you angry, that's happening in the world right now, and look into how you can use what you have to help this situation. It doesn't have to be financial. It could be if you want to make a donation to a really good cause, but it could be writing to your MP or your local representative. It could be talking about that matter with friends and coming up with ideas of how you can use what you have to help. For me, for example, this week I've been getting really upset about the migrant situation here in the UK and the way that our governments speak about and treat some of the most vulnerable people on the planet. I'm writing to my MP to ask what he's doing to counter this in Parliament and holding him to account as my representative. So I invite you to do something similar. Anything that will help create the society that we can all live in safely. I also wanted to mention just before we start the Substack newsletter, which is coming out today if you're listening to this in real time. I've been having so much fun with it recently, writing it and creating it and putting it all together. You can sign up for the free subscription via the link in the show notes or by searching Prompted by Nature on the Substack app. Or if you'd like to go paid and get the e-zine and all of the extras, the write-alongs and everything that goes with that, I'm offering this at 30% off the monthly option until the 30th of April. I thought it'd be nice to give a slightly longer window for you to be able to do that, because obviously when you're doing a podcast, people don't always listen to it in real time. So yeah, until the 30th of April 2023, you could get 30% off the monthly option, which comes to about £3.50 a month. I promise that it's well worth the money. So much work goes into this and I absolutely love it. So if you just want a bit of creative, nature-inspired inspiration, you know what I mean, each month, each 6 weeks, then please do get signed up. So on to today's episode. This week, I am thrilled to release my conversation with Lily K. Bright, which I had a couple of weeks ago. Lily is a writer and workshop facilitator who's obsessed with city nature. They write climate fiction and eco-poetry, and their main poetry project is about migration, liberation, London, Freetown, Accra, and the Painted Lady Butterfly, exploring textile arts as part of their creative process. They love supporting people to connect with nature and creativity by facilitating writing workshops, climate science training and non-violent communication training. I first came across Lily's work through a workshop that my friend and I went to a few weeks ago at the Chelsea Physic Garden. It was called Spells and Science, and it was part of the Queer Botany residency at the Physic Garden. And it was just, as I say in the conversation, I don't get out much, but it was such a lovely way to kind of re-engage with being in a completely different space. And Lily's facilitation was just wonderful. And yeah, it was just such a great day. I knew that I had to invite them to come on the podcast and have a little chat. So in this conversation, we discuss Lily's insights into multimedia approach to their creativity, the merging of science and art in their work, and the ways in which these disciplines can interact, their relationship with nature, how it developed and how it has shifted and changed, Lily's fascination with trees and birds, well-being for writers and reframing time management, the importance of rest, how Lily approaches their creative practice and how they gain inspiration through social events and collaboration, the lesson Lily would like to share and their vision for the future. All of the links that Lily mentions, all of the events that they're taking part in, all of the websites that they mention in our chat are in the show notes on the episode page of the website. And you can find Lily on their website, www.cherrytreewalk.com, and on Instagram at cherrytree_walk. conversations that would go really well with this one are Series 1, Episode 8A, Ian Solomon-Kowal, also known as KMT, Biodiversity, Creativity and Safe Space in Urban Settings. Series 2, Episode 1, Avni Trivedi, Reconnecting with the Wisdom of the Body. Series 4, Episode 5A, Cheryl Duerden, In a Land of Giants, Empathetic Forestry. And then Series 5, Episode 1A, Bryony Benge-Abbott, Exploring the Intersections. As always, I am on Instagram at prompted.by.nature. And the website is www.promptedbynature.co.uk, where you can find all of my upcoming nature writing courses and day retreats here in Sussex. The writing prompt for this episode will be up on Tuesday, and I hope you'll join me there. And it's worth mentioning as well that the subscription to Substack, the free one, I do a weekly writing prompt over there, and it's really lovely because it goes straight into your inbox. And then you can, if you've got the app, you can make a little comment on it and we can have a little chat, and it's really nice. Anyway, I shall love you and leave you. Happy listening, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
I'm Lily K. Bright. I'm a writer and workshop facilitator, and I enjoy supporting people to connect with nature and creativity. And at the moment, I'm really obsessed with fabric and sewing. I have a fabric books course that I'm doing at the moment on Wednesday morning. So I've just come from that. And I'm really enjoying how that's working with my poetry as well. I'm doing this poetry project about the Painted Lady butterfly and migration and family history and ancestry and lots of stuff. And some of that poetry is being inspired by some of the fabric work that I'm doing. So yeah, I'm really excited about how things overlap and looking at lots of different things and how they overlap and interact with each other.
Have you done anything like with your hands in that sense before?
Good question. Not really, I would say. Most of what I do is more like in my head, like more like words and writing. And then occasionally I started in lockdown, one of the first lockdowns, I started doing drawing classes and painting classes. And that was quite different and new from what I usually do. So I'd say that's like the closest. But again, that's like not something that I do very often.
And just before we kind of go on to like the kind of questions, I love it when people say, oh, I'm working with a different medium and it's having this effect. So if it's okay, I'd really love to like ask you a bit more about that.
Great.
So first of all, the project sounds amazing and I would love to hear more about that and kind of how it's unfolding for you, depending on how much you can talk about. I don't know how much you can talk about it, but also how working with fabric in particular, like what impact that's having on, not just because you kind of mentioned, you know, the impact on the project, but also like your creativity in general. Is it shifting it slightly? Or yeah, I'd love to kind of go into that a little bit.
Yeah. I really enjoy it. I think one of the things I really like about fabric is that there's so many different dimensions to it. There's like the colors and the textures and the threads and like the weight of the fabric. There's all these different elements to it. And so I think it's been really interesting for me and helpful for me in terms of like sensory stuff. Like I have some sensory sensitivities. So then I think that means that I end up, when I'm having a pleasurable sensory experience, and I enjoy it even more. So I'm like, wow, this is such a beautiful fabric. One of the ways that it's been influencing my poetry has been that I knew that I wanted to be exploring colour with the poetry project. And so the Painted Lady butterfly is like oranges and yellows and kind of like the warmer reddishy kind of tones. So I've been exploring that in my writing, but then exploring that in fabric has been really interesting as well. And then like looking at a piece of sewing that I've done that's using those different fabrics and then writing in response to that is then like opening up these like more dimensions, I think, because then it's not just about how does the color look, but it's like, okay, but this, how does the color look in this particular texture and then next to this other color in this other texture?
That's so interesting how the same, also, like, how the same color can look different depending on the fabric and the texture. Is there a reason you chose the Painted Lady Butterfly?
Yes, so I was doing an art and nature course, which was like all different types of media, being inspired by nature, and we were invited to do a project that's choose a culture and choose some how do I say this? Or what am I trying to say? To choose something artistic that's in a particular culture. So it could be like looking at haiku in Japan, for example, or something like that. And I knew that I wanted to look at West Africa and England, and so and also looking at nature. And I'm really into trees and birds. So I was like, okay, let's see if I can see some like links in terms of plants or in terms of birds that are in the UK and that are also in Sierra Leone and Ghana. And I was like looking through these lists on Wikipedia, like birds in Sierra Leone and like trees of Ghana, and like looking for ones that were familiar to me. And I wasn't really seeing anything that was jumping out at me and that really was like resonating with me. And then I was also doing a butterfly course, and learning about migration in different butterflies. And I learned about the Painted Lady, and the Painted Lady migrates between Europe and Africa. So I was like, ha, this is the one. It's not going to be trees or birds, it's going to be butterflies. Okay, I wasn't expecting that. So that's how I chose it, because I knew that I wanted to be exploring those countries. Well, specifically the capital cities of those countries, so London, Freetown, and Accra.
I love that, like, we used the word synchronicity earlier. Like, I love that synchronicity of, yeah, just going, oh, hang on a minute. They both, or this butterfly does all of those, and it just worked. And then when you were talking about, doing a butterfly course, I'm always really interested, especially when it comes to people working in terms of creativity in nature, so whether they're a painter or a sculptor or a writer or whatever, the part that kind of more sciencey, logical, I guess maybe you could say, do you know what I mean? Much more empirical, research, the impact that has on your work.
This is something that really fascinates me as well, because I was always saying to myself, oh, I'm not a sciencey person. Oh, I'm not, like, that's not my, oh yeah, I'm more of an artsy person. Like when I was at school, I did biology AS level, but only because my teacher's like, you can't pick another essay subject. You have to pick something different. And I didn't want to do it. And so I've always thought of myself in that way. And then there was, I can't remember exactly when this was, but in the last, like quite recently, in the last few years, I was looking over some of the things I'm really interested in. And I was like, but these are all sciences. I'm like, botany, that's a science. Like, and I was like, but wait, when did this happen? I've been saying that I'm not a science person, but there's all these sciences that I'm doing for fun. What? And it was really surreal for me. And so that got me thinking about like different ways of learning about things and how there's some things that I didn't enjoy that much at school because of the way that I was being introduced to them, and that it's just very different, like to have a subject and just go off in the direction that you want without any kind of rules or restrictions or curriculum or anything like that. And yeah, I do find it really interesting that like arts and sciences, not seeing them as these like two distinct disciplines that are very different, but how they interact and interplay with each other. And Yeah, there's been a few things like that because I used to be a web designer and web developer. And it's only like sometime later, I'm like, yeah, I have worked in tech. I mean, a lot of the times I've been doing more of the kind of communication side of things or the people side of things, but still in tech. And I've worked in tech for ages. So, yeah, there's all of these things. And often people might say to me that they're not creative. And they're like, oh, I'm not creative. I do X, and they'll say something that they don't think of as not creative, but that is creative. There's so many. I think that creativity is just part of being human. I don't think there's anyone who isn't creative. And so these subjects, like science subjects, that people sometimes don't think of as creative because they're not art subjects. I know that, but that's also creating. Yeah, I'm really fascinated by it as well. And one of the things that has been really interesting to me on that subject recently has been the scientific names of organisms and being inspired by, like, what can you create from that, or what does that suggest to you, and that kind of thing.
I was going to say that was what I really liked about the spells and science workshop was at the beginning you said about the botanical names sounding like spells, sounding like, you know, these sort of incantations almost. And I ha and when I was there, I think that was what, and it I think that's maybe what kind of got me thinking much more clearly about the link in terms of creativity and expression and science was when I was there, and I think because of the prompts that you were giving us, I started to think more along those lines. Whereas previously, and I think that was part of the reason that I was really drawn to the workshop, was because, you know, similar to you, I've always been, oh, I'm expressive and I'm creative and, you know, I'm not academic. I really struggle with that sort of stuff. But actually, when you're in a space and you're being shown, like, these are the different names, we can use those things. We can use, like, the more scientific information about those to actually create something creative. You know what I mean? More expressive. I think that is just fascinating to me. That is what, yeah, it opened up things that I just hadn't really experimented with before. And it was like, oh, actually, there does seem to be this merging of the two things in what I'm reading at the moment as well, in terms of what's around and the kind of, or I guess like the direction of nature writing or arts and that kind of thing that's like nature focused.
Yeah, I just think there's so much possibility and potential. Yeah, and I think it's also about not having like a hierarchy of these different kinds of ways of interacting with nature as well. Because I think sometimes when I'm leading tree walks, people say, "Oh, I don't know the names of them." And I'm like, "Well, that's fine. You don't have to know." Like, there's lots of ways of knowing about things. There's lots of ways of connecting and all of that. And then I think then it becomes less of a pressure and more of a like, oh, well, actually I'm interested in learning the name of this one and I'm not really interested in the other ones. Or actually, no, I'm not really interested in learning about the names. I just want to touch the trees or whatever it is. Yeah, I think that makes a big difference as well. And not kind of seeing, oh, well, it's better to be artistic than scientific, or it's better to be scientific than artistic.
Yeah, the two things can merge quite neatly, I think, like quite nicely. So I love hearing about people's creative journeys and how they kind of got started. And I would love to know about, yeah, your creative journey, how you got to this point, how this became your work. Have you always been creative? And just when did you get to a point where this became just what you did, I guess.
Yeah, so I would say that I've been writing for as long as I can remember in some way or another. I don't know if I necessarily have always seen myself as creative, but I have always been creative. But then I would also say that about everyone. but like in the, like, I don't know, creative with a capital C or whatever kind of thinking. I think I'm just, yeah, like when I was doing web design and web development, that really felt like the web design stuff was the like artistic creative stuff, and the web development stuff was like the coding and tech stuff. But and at the same time, that those binaries were completely ridiculous, because like design is about communicating effectively, and it's like it's not just about making things look nice and stuff. And like to write code, you have to be creative. Like creativity is like problem solving. So yeah, and I got into that. I got into web design and web development as a teenager, and just was really interested in figuring out like how do websites work. And so that's kind of one of the earliest things I can think of in terms of like creativity, I think. And that's like stayed with me for a long time. And then I went off and did lots of different types of stuff, tech wise. And then I left the tech industry for a bit and was working in cooperative cafes, and learned how to cook. And so then it was being like creative in that way. So I guess when you're asking about like being creative with your hands, like cooking is one of those things which I often forget about, because I haven't been cooking that much more recently. And then I went back to the tech industry and wasn't really feeling like I was being very creative, doing different things, and was more focusing more on people and kind of getting to understand people and support people to work better together, which I also really enjoy doing. So I was doing like much more on the kind of facilitation side of things. And then in what year is it now? 23, 22, 21. In May 2021, I decided that I wanted to have more time and space for my writing. And so I left my job and became self-employed, and that's when I started focusing more on, okay, I'm like supporting people with connecting with nature and creativity. I'm writing poetry more. I'm like investing in my creativity, and yeah, all of those things. So that's kind of been the journey. Wow, I can't believe I remembered all of it.
I was just thinking as you were speaking how, like, I don't want to say brave. Maybe that's the word. I feel like it's such a huge step to just go, I want to actually invest my time in developing myself as a writer, developing what I offer, and kind of just putting your whole self into that. Because it's so easy to be like split and just say, well, I should be doing this. But it's like there was that, you know, I should be doing it, but I have to do this. I think that's such a big step. Did it feel like a big step at the time?
Yeah, it did. It's really funny though, because I really struggle to do things I don't want to do. So I felt like I needed to leave my job. I was trying to think about like, well, I'd already, when I took that job, when I started that job, I was already thinking, I can't really imagine working in the tech industry at another place after this. And I thought I was going to be there for a long time, and I ended up not being there for a long time. Although it was long for me, it was like a couple of years or something. And so then I was like, okay, well, what else am I going to do? And there wasn't anything else that I was like, oh yeah, this is what I feel compelled to do. So then it's like, well, I guess I'm doing this then, even though it's terrifying. Yeah, I think some people are much more able to do things because they feel like they should do them in terms of like work, for example, I mean, and are much more oriented around duty, and I'm not very good at doing that. So it kind of felt like, well, this like I can't think of anything else that I want to do, so this is what I'm going to do, even though I can't really see how it's going to work exactly. And yeah, I feel like I've made lots of my decisions around like work in that way of like, well, I guess like this is what is like interesting to me. So I guess that's what I'm going to do then. I mean, that's why I became a web designer and web developer. That's why I left web design and went to work at the cafes. That's why I went back to tech. Like, oh, that's yeah.
It's like following that thread, isn't it? Like, that's what I always think about pretty much everything I've done. It's like, oh, there's a thread that's starting to unravel, and I kind of want to unpick it and
Yeah.
see where it leads. And then I would love to hear about your relationship with nature, how it kind of emerged. Whether you have any memorable experiences that, kind of, like those core memories that just kind of stay with you, whether it's changing and shifting, and how any memorable experiences you might have had shaped how that you engage, how the ways in which you engage with the natural or the other than human world.
Yeah, so what I would say is about 7-ish years ago, not so good with the history dates memory thing, but let's say 7-ish years ago, there's an organization called Wild in the City, which is created by and for people of color and is about connecting with nature. And there was this 6-week, I don't really want to say course, maybe more like experience of called Nature Connectors, which was about meeting up every Sunday to be in a different place in nature in South London and Croydon. And yeah, there were a group of us and we met up and went to different places and talked about our experiences in nature and learned how to do different things and learned about different things. So we like learned how to, I don't know why tying knots is the one that's coming to mind because that was the one I struggled the most with. I'm not sure I learned much about tying knots, but we learned how to like create shelters and how to make fires, like using natural materials rather than like matches, and yeah, other things like that. And that was such a connecting experience. It's made such a huge difference for me, and learning lots about trees and different animals and things. I mean, I'm saying trees because the trees was what really stood out for me, and that's where I got my like massive obsession with trees from. And so yeah, I would say that was something that's really been like a hugely memorable and influential part of like how I connect with nature and why it's important to me.
And have you found that since then it's kind of stayed the same, or has it shifted? Has it changed? Has the way that you be with nature, has that kind of shifted at all?
Yeah, it's definitely changed. I feel like it's just become more and more expansive. I think one thing that hasn't changed is that's really important for me has been like that experience really helped to cement my feelings of belonging in nature. Yeah, it's like some like nature groups are very white male dominated, and sometimes on walks, like people can kind of assume that queer Black people don't really belong in nature. And being in that Nature Connectors group and having that experience each week really helped me to kind of like solidly feel like I belong in nature, regardless of any of those kinds of experiences. So that's been something that's really kind of stayed the same. But then I've gone and done like loads of different things like tree walks and tree ID courses. Like I went massively into all these different tree things and botany courses and stuff like this. And so that it's been really important that having that strong sense of belonging has, it's been really important that that's been there. And then I feel like then stuff is just built on top of that. So I started getting really into birds last year, with International Dawn Chorus Day, which I think is in April. And I started going to bird walks then. And then a bit later, I started getting into butterflies, and I'm like, okay, this is interesting. Like, I'm just going to keep adding on like things that I'm like, it's funny because I'd kind of started off when I went self-employed. I started off saying, oh yeah, I'm a tree nerd, and then I was like, okay, well, I'm a tree nerd and an amateur birder. And then I was like, okay, and I'm also okay. I'm just going to say nature nerd now because this is starting to become a mouthful.
Yeah, and they're starting to get smaller as well. You've got like the trees, the birds, the butterflies, teeny weeny.
Oh yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that. Interesting.
I suppose like yeah, the tree is quite dominating, isn't it? And then you look a bit closer and you notice whatever, and you know I'm with you on the tree obsession. Yeah, I'm getting really into the well, I have been for a while, the kind of what's it called? The spiritual, not a spiritual aspects, but you know, like the traditional meanings and especially Celtic meanings of trees, the triolum and all of that sort of stuff. And yeah, I tend to go towards that side of things. I don't know why. You know, it's so funny how we're drawn to these different spokes of the same wheel almost.
That's one of the things I really love about it. There's so many different ways in, and I think that's why it's kind of possible to be interested in anything, because what if you find the way in that works for you? And I feel like, yeah, with trees, there's just so many different aspects to it. Yeah, I'm really interested in meanings as well, and different like languages around trees. For a while, I was learning German, and then I got specifically really interested in learning German around tree names.
Wow. Are they different? Like, how does that, are they? I think that's fascinating.
It is. It's really interesting, and I think I don't know. I started making this like I can't. This is a few years ago now, but I started making this kind of map of like the scientific name, the English common name, the German common name, and like, and then make and I was making this like family tree of trees of tree families. So like I'd have all of the names in, like I'd have all the trees their different names, and then okay, well this like the birch is related to the hazel, so then they'd be like next to each other in this map thing that I was making. That was just because it was interesting to me, and I was like, this is helping me to learn the names and stuff as well.
That's fascinating, and like deepen your relationship to it. Did you notice any different or any similarities rather between the German and the English?
Yeah, it's been a while now, so there's not really, and my pronunciation was never great, but like the name for birch is quite similar. Don't oh, I'm gonna get the pronunciation so wrong, but it's Die Birke or Birke. It's like Birke, and beach is quite similar as well. I can't remember. I feel like it's Buke, like beach and book are related, and I think there's something similar in the Celtic meanings as well, where there's like specific trees associated with books and paper and things like this.
Yeah, I think the Celt I think in the Oum it's beath, beath. And
Yes,
again,
for
I'm butchering
birch.
the the pronunciation, but it's like beath or something like that. Yeah. I love how everyone just goes in such different directions when, you know, it's like one thing that gets you in, and then it opens up this mosaic and this, well, it is the mycelium, isn't it? It's like all of those networks and pathways, and they're all connected. Oh, it's just, oh, I love it. So I was looking at your website, and you are, I was looking at, I was just like, wow, like the scale of your work in terms of not just, you know, nature and creativity, but I was looking at your work around like time management for writers, which is definitely something I'm working on this year, is trying to be more efficient with my time. And I was wondering how that came about, and in terms of time management, how it kind of enables rather than restricts in terms of creativity. And any advice to any burnt out creatives based on the work that you've done. But yeah, I'd love to hear more about that aspect of what you do, because it's fascinating.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that like, there's so many different ways of thinking and talking about it as well, because like I think time management and efficiency don't really, those words don't really resonate with me. And at the same time, I'm very interested in time and well-being and supporting people who are burnt out or preventing burnout, or those kinds of things. And it's like it's all just different ways of talking about similar things, I think. So yeah, it's just I think it's really interesting. So I think one of the things is I know that I want to do lots of things. I mean, that's probably obvious. So I think that's one of the I guess drivers that is kind of in my mind. And at the same time, I'm like often telling myself I'm not. Like, I think rest is also really important, and like not doing things is really important. And I think that's where I think sometimes efficiency can, or let's say the way that I think of efficiency, which is not like there are many ways of thinking about it, but the way I think of it is often about like trying to fit more stuff into one piece of time that's already kind of strained, which is not what I'm trying to do. But I heard about this book, which I have not read, but I heard about called A Beautiful Constraint. And when I heard about it, I found that idea really helpful, that was talking about how constraints can be enabling and supportive. So, and that's definitely something I find. Like sometimes I wish that I had like loads of time, but then when I have loads of time, I don't necessarily do the things I want to do with it. So actually, like, oh, I've only got like a couple of hours this week. Sometimes that helps me to be creative rather than hinders me. So sometimes I think it's like looking at it from that perspective is something that I find really helpful. And then, yeah, I don't know. I feel like lots of the stuff around like time management is stuff that I just really struggle with myself. It's like, oh, I know it's really important to prioritize, but I find that really difficult. And so this is like stuff that I'm constantly trying to do myself. But yeah, maybe we could talk more about like well-being and things. Oh no, go on,
Yeah.
Hannah.
No, I was going to say it's that idea of being, I've heard, I can't remember where I heard it, the not the sage from the stage, but the guide from the side. Like you're immersed in what it is you're sharing because it helps you, because it's part of what you're doing in your own practice. And so yeah, let's reframe it then. So in terms of like well-being for writers and keeping well so that we're able to nourish that aspect of ourselves, let's say, how does that work for you, and what work are you doing around that in terms of sharing it or in your own life?
So, oh, there's so many things to say. I think one of the things is about connecting with what I need, which has been really, I think, which makes a really big difference because I'm really like, oh, I want to do this and I want to do this and I want to do this. And okay, but what do I need? Like, if I need to rest, it in a way, it doesn't really matter that I want to do X, Y, and Z because it's more like I need to figure out how to meet the rest need as a priority thing. And I was being coached by someone called Paul Sockett, who helped me to realize that a couple of years ago. That's really helpful. And then lots of stuff in nonviolent communication has been really helpful for that as well. That's kind of, well, what are needs and like how do we get more in touch with what we need? And that work is something I find really helpful. And I train people in nonviolent communication, and I find it really helpful to train people in it because it helps me to put more time and energy into learning more about it as well and practicing it. And then, so yeah, I think connecting with needs and coming to an understanding of needs not being negotiable has been really helpful and continues to be really helpful. there was this workshop that I used to do around burnout prevention. I'm trying to remember the things that the main things from that I found really helpful. One of them was like the burnout recovery triangle. Let's see if I can remember. There's like three aspects to it, and it's like the fire triangle where like you only have a fire if you have all elements of the fire triangle. So like if you want to put out a fire, and if you remove the oxygen, then the fire is going to go out. This kind of thing. And with the burnout recovery triangle, it's kind of like you need all elements of the triangle in order to recover from burnout. So one of them was around reconnecting with your goals and priorities. Oh, am I going to be able to remember the rest? Maybe I can share a link afterwards
Yeah,
about
I can
it.
put something in the show notes,
Cool, that would be
definitely.
great. Yeah, I think one of them was around rest and not trying to do too much. And then the other one has currently escaped me. But yeah, things like that, like connecting with, okay, well, what are the things I need to be doing or experiencing in order to be well or more well? Yeah. And then, well, I'll just add one more thing, which is I recently learnt about an organizational system called the Constellation System, which is by a writer called Rachel Steven. And it's helping me so much. And it's basically looks kind of laying out these six areas of life. And one of the elements is like, what are the things that restore your energy in these six elements of life? And so that's been something that's kind of really helpful for me in terms of thinking about the different kinds of rest that I need and what activities do I find restful. And rest not being like, okay, now I'm just going to be in a state of limbo of like inactivity, but like maybe for mental rest, maybe that would be meditation for me, or for physical rest, maybe that's like lying down with my electric blanket. So yeah, thinking about the different things that I need.
I love hearing about that because I know that that is something that I'm like perpetual motion and I always have been. And so I love hearing you speak in that way about it because it is so often down to that like reframing of the question of not how can I do more, but yeah, taking into account this thing of rest, which it's part of our society, isn't it? It's like ingrained in us that you just go, 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 and you only stop. Like I remember when I was in my 20s, I would literally only stop when my body made me,
Yeah.
and it was starting. And I'm still, you know, I still need a reminder. And actually, you speaking is a reminder to myself of like, yeah, we go back to that. We go back to, am I rested, and that sort of thing. And I think it feels like that aspect of your work ties in so beautifully with everything else that you're doing because it's almost like that's sort of what it comes back to is like that nourishment of rest, being in nature, being nurturing our creativity, let's say. Like that to me feels like a triangle, like you were talking about a triangle, that sort of like feels like that. There's more growth in rest than there is in action sometimes. Well, probably all the time.
Yeah, like it's all needed, and I think this is where like nature metaphors can be really helpful. Like there's a book called Wintering by Catherine May that talks
Love that
about,
one.
yeah, so talk that I think it, in within like capitalism, there's just, yeah, this like just perpetual motion that you're talking about, and not recognizing that like there are like waves and cycles. And like sometimes there's more activity, sometimes there's less activity. This is something I really appreciate about the constellation system as well, because there's also like looking at which areas of life are like very active at in a particular moment, and which areas are like lying fallow or quieter and things, and recognizing that they change. And yeah. And not just, okay, everything's at 100%. Like, well, that's not how percentages work. That's not how people work.
No.
But it is how we're like told
Yeah.
by society and capitalism that things ought to be, or that we should be, you know.
And if we're not, then it's our fault. We're doing
Yeah,
something wrong.
exactly.
So before we come on to kind of the final questions, I wanted to ask about what I guess the concept of a creative practice might mean to you, where you are in that right now, whether it's, I'm going to say whether it's consistent, but I feel like it'll, you know, we've sort of talked about how it changes and, but yeah, I'd love to hear a bit about your own creative practice in inverted commas.
Yeah, thank you. What a lovely question. So I think one of the main things for me is about creativity being joyful. So whenever I'm at a point where I'm starting to feel like, oh, I'm like falling behind with this, or I should be doing this, I'm like, hang on a minute, that is not what this is about. Like, the only reason I'm doing this is because I enjoy doing it. So, which doesn't mean that it's not going to be challenging sometimes, but like challenging in an enjoyable way, or you know. So yeah, it definitely shifts and changes. And sometimes I do get to a point where I'm not enjoying writing, and then I stop, which can sometimes be hard. And sometimes I'll be, oh, I haven't been writing for ages. I'm like, that's okay. I'm just reminding myself about that. Where I'm at now is starting to increase the amount of writing that I'm doing. And at the moment, I'm well, in the last couple of weeks, I've been like gearing up to March being more around creativity. I've got a writing residency at the end of the month, and just a few like different creative things dotted around that I'm really excited about. So I'm like, oh yeah, I get to like spend more time with my main poetry project, and oh, what things do I want to take away with me onto residency and things like this. Yeah, I would say in terms of like consistency and cycles and changes, there's like some things that I return to a lot, like writer's hour, especially on Wednesdays, which is when there's a kind of like social hangout after writing together online. So things like that, there are like these, yeah, practices that I return to that I find very supportive. And going on like going to poetry writing workshops and things I really enjoy as well. So there's one, there's a group called Speak the Word that does workshops and other events on Saturday evenings that I find really inspiring and encouraging. Yeah.
I love that you have the kind of two aspects of like the creating, but also the like the receiving, doing the courses, doing the. I know for myself, I often get so, I get very hard on myself. So I have to create, I have to, you know, output, output, output without the filling of the cup, if you like the speaking to other people and learning the things. I mean, other than like reading books, because that's often how I do it. Yeah, it's really nice to hear you talking about that more social aspect of it, because I think writing and any kind of creative art can become quite lonely, I think, because it can be quite introspective. Yeah. And actually, I was going to like kind of in that idea of like collaboration, I guess, and coming out of that introspective thing, I was going to ask you about how you connected and how you got involved with Queer Botany for their residency at the Physic Garden. How did that kind of come about? Because I just when I saw it, I was like, this is fascinating, because it's just something I've never even, I just didn't think about the link. And then, yeah, when I started reading about it, and yeah, it's, yeah, how did that come about? How did that grow?
So a really good friend of mine told me about Queer Botany. I think it was quite near the beginning of it when there were walks happening in Walthamstow, which is very far from me, And so it was something I've been meaning to kind of go to an event at some point. And then eventually I did go to an event and I connected with Sikesto and said that it would be great to work together. So we've been working together on some different events, which has been really, really fun. And so I think it's really interesting. I'm really glad you shared about a bit about your process as well, because I think we're quite different in how we approach things. I'm so much on the like, okay, what are all the events I can go to? Like that social side of things is not just with like creative practice, but with like physical activity, like all the things. I just want to be connecting with people. And I don't generally read that much. I'm excited to read more this month. But anyway, so yeah, I went to an event, connected with Sikesto. We started doing some things together, and yeah, really enjoying collaborating. Like I love co-facilitating and co-designing sessions and things. So yeah, that's been really awesome.
I think it was such a lovely collaboration as well, because it really felt like you had his work sharing the plants and the connection with like the kind of historical and that sort of those implications of that. Yeah, I just loved it as like a whole reclaiming and opportunity for growth and creativity and stuff. And I think what you brought to that was just it. Yeah, I don't get out much. So it was such a lovely thing to do in terms of like something completely different. But before we finish, there's two questions that I ask everybody. So the first one is, if there's anything that you have learnt or continue to learn, because often there's like relearning, I find I'm constantly relearning things. Anything that you've learnt or are learning in your life that you would like to share with others?
Yeah, that is such a big question. I think I'll go back to what I was sharing about needs, and especially around rest. I think that seems to be a theme that's like very present in my life and the lives of many people around me. And I think, yeah, there's just so much pressure to be productive and to like bring in money to sustain yourself and things like this, that it's really hard sometimes to not sacrifice what you need. So yeah, something around, yeah, I don't know, moments of ways of connecting with what you need in whatever ways are accessible for you.
That's such a lovely reminder. And I'm going to take that one as well. Take
Great.
that away from my day. And then the last question is envisioning a future that you would like to see or a world that you would like to live in, how would that look? How would that feel?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I imagine is having universal income so that everybody is having their needs met in terms of like what they need to like food and housing and all of those kinds of things. I mean, I think there's lots of ways of achieving that, but universal income I feel like is it's like, okay, now we've all got the income thing sorted and now we can do what feels alive for us and contribute to the world in the ways that make sense to us and excite us and all of those things, rather than like feeling like we have to do X or Y or Z, you know. And then there's that spaciousness of, yeah, connecting with people, connecting with nature in multiple different ways. Like it, I imagine lots of the things I do already, but not having this kind of like backdrop of feeling like, oh, I could be like doing something that's earning money right now. But like wandering around with trees, looking at birds, paying attention to birds in various ways. Yeah, spending time with loved ones, like the things that people often talk about when you ask them what they like to do with their time, and it's like, oh, you know, just being like just existing with people I love and doing things I enjoy, going for walks, those kinds of things.
I love what you said about what feels alive. to you, doing the things that feel alive. I haven't heard it expressed like that, but that, yeah, that there's like a real spark there, I think. I love that. I think that's such a lovely vision. So thank you so much for talking to me this morning. This morning, this after ish, this morning, this
Now.
afternoon ish. Now. Yes, now. Right now. So before we say goodbye, can you tell people where they can find you, the places that you kind of are, anything that you're doing forthcoming that you would like people to know about?
Thank you. Yeah. So you can find me online at cherrytreewalk.com. And I'm also on Instagram at cherrytree_walk. And if you're in London, I will be at the Deptford Literature Festival on the 18th of March, which is a Saturday. I'll be collaborating with my good friend and colleague, Laura. We have a day of nature writing workshops that I'm really excited about. Yeah, I think those are all of the things.
Cool. Before we go, why cherry tree? Because I was thinking,
Oh,
oh, I wonder why it's cherry tree walk. I'm gonna
yeah,
ask.
I feel like I don't have a super short answer to this. Okay, let's see. One sentence answer-ish. Where I used to live, which is where my parents still live, there's a road near there is lined with cherry trees. And one day I was walking along it and I just started singing to myself about being on Cherry Tree Walk, which is what I call it. And then so then when I was thinking about names for my business, I was like, oh yeah, that's what it's gonna be.
That's a brilliant reason. I love
Yeah,
that. I love this image of you walking along singing a song about being on Cherry Tree Walk. That's,
thanks.
we should all do that. Yeah, thank you so much for your time and your work and your thoughts and your energy. I've really enjoyed this. It's going to set me up for the rest of the week, I think.
Oh, thanks, Helen. I've really enjoyed it as well.